You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Hello!
And across the table from him, we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
That's it. We've got Bob.
Well, you can ask me again. I'll be somebody else if you like.
And next to him, we've got Martin Page.
Hello. Oh, right.
Oh, it sounded just like him.
Fooled you.
Yeah, I don't know where everybody else is. But
they heard, you know, they just said, oh, forget it. We're not coming to the podcast anymore.
I don't know why, because our guest today is our first three-time guest.
Wow.
Greg Ondo from Steinberg. Greg.
Yay! All right, Greg. Good to be back.
Welcome to the
three-time
Audio Nowcast.
Guest. Was that like a tree guest? A trio guest?
This is his third time.
I think he makes him a stalker, actually.
Hey, you know what, left the building since we've been there.
But come on, this is show number 69, ladies and gentlemen.
Is it really?
69.
Wow.
Stop it, Bobby.
Yeah, stop even thinking.
I'll take my knee pads off as we speak.
Well, anyhow, Greg, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast.
It's great to be back.
For people that don't know, Greg Ondo is from Steinberg, and his official title is, Greg?
Field Marketing Manager.
See, and we just heard that, your little beep right now, so obviously there's some
trying
marketing.
Trying to shut off my cell phone, so I'm not annoying.
Some marketing magic happening out there. But Greg's joining us today, and he's out here, so we wanted to take advantage of having him here. And Greg, let's just start talking about Steinberg and what's been happening.
I'm pleased to talk about Steinberg for a change, because you know, when you're not here, all we talk about is Pro Tools, Logic, Ableton Live, Reason, and everything else except Steinberg, so carry on.
Well, okay. And Bobby?
And it's been a while since you were here, so there's a lot of new stuff.
I'm kidding.
Well, yeah, let's talk about Steinberg. Let's talk about, first of all, Cubase 5. It came out, and it's getting some good reviews out there.
Yeah, Cubase 5, we released it at the Winter NAMM show in January at Anaheim, and it's been doing incredibly well. It's been our most successful release that we've ever done.
Why don't you, we talked a little bit about it on our NAMM show, but why don't you just give us a little, point out some of the key features that are different in Cubase 5, because it was a pretty big overhaul.
Yeah. We had we saw that a lot of our customers were using kind of third-party tools to get stuff done. So we included a lot of pitch correction tools, like an automatic pitch correction, kind of a graphic editing pitch correction tool called Very Audio. We also added kind of like an MPC-style drum machine, something for kind of working with loops. We added batch export so you can make like stem files with one mouse
click. Yeah, that's huge. That's huge.
And also something for composers, the VST expression, so you can kind of manage all of your articulations found in sample libraries and kind of edit them, not as just MIDI notes, but as actual kind of MIDI, separate MIDI events in a list editor that carries over into the notation editor.
Wait, let's go back really quick. What is that batch? That batch files? What?
Batch export. We saw a lot of people using multiple applications. They may record in one program, mix in another, edit in another. But migrating all the data was always a problem. So we wanted to make it easy because our users are using, built-in effects, a lot of software instruments, audio tracks, and if they hand it off to someone else, they may not have the same plugins or same instruments. So the batch export within one mouse click could basically create stem files of every element in the project, so it plays back exactly as
so
it was.
So does it print like the reverb if it has a reverb and it?
Yes,
and
on separate tracks, the effects begin separate tracks, the instruments. So instead of having to solo each track and set up locators, you just simply just do a batch export and it'll just make stem files.
So you'll have a clean version of it, and then you'll have the effect version of it.
Yeah.
That's genius.
And I remember at the NAMM show.
That is genius.
On our show, on the podcast, talking about it after the NAMM show, that was one of the things I noticed, that anybody who was actually a sequencer user, when they heard about that new
jumped
feature,
up and down.
Yeah, they went nuts. Because in the real world, trading projects between studios and platforms is the biggest nightmare.
Oh, I have a friend right now who wants me to do a mix on something, and he has a ton of plugins that I don't have, and he has all these effects and all this specialized vocal stuff, and right now what he's having to do is print everything and then export everything.
And it'll take 10 times longer to prepare it than it does to actually mix it.
Yeah, it's quite a feat right now. So that's amazing.
Yeah, and we also saw a lot of our kind of high-end profile clients. who didn't necessarily want to give away all their secrets of their production when they handed over a session. So, you know, like this producer wouldn't want someone to see the EQ settings or the compression settings. So all that is now kind of just included in the actual rendered file, right, and they can still kind of keep all their intellectual property of their production intact.
Let me just reiterate really quick, because I know we have a lot of people who are new to music and new to sequencing that listen to this podcast. And that batch export is huge, especially if you want to work in another studio, because let's say you're doing a project, a song that you wrote, and it's 24 tracks, and you put specific plugins on the vocals, and you've used specific reverbs on the drums, and you've used specific compression. Right now, if you were going to take that project to another studio, you had to hope and pray that they either have the same effects that you do, or that the other way to do it is you take your drum and you'd make a track of just the reverb along with your drum, or you make a track of the drum printed with the reverb along with the original, so that basically when you went to this studio, you had those effects printed one way or another, either on the actual track or another track. And what Steinberg has done has made the process painless, really. You just hit a button and it's going to give you the original track, and it'll give you the effects for that track, or is it that track affected?
You could have it either way.
Really?
So,
and it's not just effects, it's also instruments. Right. So if you use, you know, I have a lot of really weird virtual instruments that I use sometimes, and if I try to hand off a project to somebody else who doesn't have those instruments, they can't load and play the file.
And even if you don't want to hand it off, if just say you're like, okay, let's get the CPU usage down.
Yeah,
that's
huge. I want to go to real-time audio.
No, it's true.
You just go bang, off you go. It's been a request for
forever.
Forever. Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
And you guys are the first that have done this.
And we really did a lot of research with this past release with Cubase 5, and we really want to kind of provide a lot of solutions that people have been asking for. So, you know, it's been incredibly well received on our forums, and just by, you know, especially by the market, sales have been phenomenal.
And I do have to say, in fairness, there are other sequencer manufacturers that would claim to do this as
right,
well.
So that's true.
We do have to be
that's true.
Fair.
Equally fair.
There are other sequencers that have export and rendering screens, but I have to say the Steinberg one is the most elegant. It's the newest, so it's you know, based on the most experience and the most mature product.
There's a guy.
But it's good. Every sequencer should have that kind of functionality. The idea is interchange.
Well, yeah. I mean, the export of obviously exporting the track, but the actual splitting up of the effects and things like that.
Yeah.
That's Are there? Who else does that? Does Pro Tools do
no,
that?
No, Pro Tools doesn't.
Yeah. That's so. I mean, that's one of the big ones, and that's why I think it's pretty awesome.
I believe Sonar does, and I believe I don't know if Logic does or not. I remember complaining that it. I think I remember Bill Burgess being here one night and complaining that it didn't, although I don't want to put words in his mouth.
No, I'll complain because it doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't?
Yeah.
Okay.
And if it does, it's probably hidden in the environment, four pages down and
well,
three
yeah.
pages deep.
Once you get your PhD, it's written on the back of your diploma where to find that.
Logic. Lots of ghastly indirect.
But no, but that's I mean, that's huge. That is huge. That's really awesome.
And it's really, really easy to get around on, which is what you need in that situation in a project. You shouldn't have to feel like a creative genius to just interchange a project with another studio.
Right.
It just shouldn't be that hard.
Especially when you, and I respectfully say this, especially when you're not the leading, the most used sequencer out there.
Right.
Because, you know, respectfully, Cubase is not, unfortunately, is not the most used. It's really up there, but like, obviously Logic and Pro Tools, everybody's sequencing, and everybody's very, it's very hard to migrate off of a Pro Tools project when everybody's got Pro Tools. So if you're in Cubase and you need to go to a Pro Tools session, it's very easy. If you can press a couple of buttons and make it all be audio and send it off to somebody, you're going to be much more compatible.
But even going Pro Tools to Pro Tools, it's still pretty difficult if you don't have the same plugins and the same stuff.
We just went through that where we completed a project on the latest Pro Tools and had to give it to an artist to basically teach his band, and he had an older 002 system with an old version of
the
software.
And the band still doesn't know the track.
As a result, yeah.
Anyhow, didn't mean to interrupt you, but that I just really wanted to point out how awesome that feature is.
It is. Right, it's really great.
There's another great feature that I mean, I'm sure it came out in Nuendo 4 is the better routing system. And I mean, I'm an analog engineer, but you can
kind of flexible routing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was another thing that was.
Yeah. again, we had a lot of feature requests for being able to do side chaining with VST and to be able to, you know, have, like, we would always have kind of, you know, because of our plugin delay compensation, because we're the first program to have true plugin delay compensation. Kind of how they had initially set up, it wasn't as flexible for not being able to route like a later group to an earlier group. So we kind of changed that, and that was implemented in Cubase 4.1 and Nuendo 4.1 when it came out.
And to be layman about it, just so say for example you're in a mix and you have a mix set up and you have an instrument playing or drums playing whatever, and you have an effects bus up, let's say Innuendo or Cubase, and it's a reverb, let's just say, or delay, and you would like to send that delay, that same delay, to another reverb. It's called telescoping effects. That's a very common practice in real mixing world. Nuendo 3.0 and 2 and before that was not able to let you do that. You'd have to do it with, you could do it, but it's much more convoluted. But now with since Nuendo 4, I think, right?
Yeah,
Nuendo 4.1. You can use a channel can have an input from a bus. So you can actually do a lot of complicated, well, not really complicated, but time compensated side chaining and parallel compression and parallel. Right. Processing that makes it a pro box.
That's awesome.
Sexy. Mm-hmm. Very good.
That's great. Now, what other features were on Cubase 5?
One of the things that we did for a lot of our composer clients, and we have a lot of the big film composers like Hans Zimmer and Harry Gregson Williams, James Newton Howard, is for them to manage all of their articulations for, you know, sample libraries where, you know, maybe they hit C0 and I will play the strings back with a bow, C-sharp 0, maybe spiccato, D0, and as they play, maybe pizzicato. But there's really no effective way of kind of being able to manage the articulations because what you actually did is record like a MIDI note. And then you'd, you know, when you go to your notation view, you'd have all these low notes that would come out. And often the composers would have multiple tracks with each track being a different articulation. So now we have one track, you know, the VST expressions, all the articulations can be mapped over different MIDI channels or controllers so that all the articulations can be done on a single track and be able to access all the articulations.
Wow.
So it's already been supported by the Vienna libraries, who have already done the VST expression maps. And we get a bank of sounds with Halion 1 that comes with Cubase. And also we give a 90-day trial version of our Halion Symphonic Library, the 16-bit version, which has all the articulations, which can be unlocked for $99. So now you can just effectively just say, oh, I want a staccato here. I want this to switch to pizzicato. I want this to be accented and just be able to kind of drop the articulations in. And it also kind of translates directly into the notation editor. So if I put a staccato on a note, it'll actually put the staccato in the notation view.
Wow.
As well.
And it just from an organizational standpoint, it makes a huge difference. The first time I used it on a project, I ended up with so many fewer tracks than I used to use because I'd have these folders. You know, I could have a violin folder for first violins that had 10, 15 different articulations in it. I wouldn't even be using all of them on any piece necessarily.
But you had them ready to go.
But they had to be ready to go because you don't want to be searching for them when you do need them. And now all of that stuff can live on one track per section is how I do it. And then you just use the articulation editor.
And it was a pain when you did score because exactly as you say, key switching is what they commonly call it, where you have like the Giga Studios or the Kontakt programs where you'd have – you play like C0 to switch between Mikado, staccato, whatever the choice was.
Yeah, and then you'd go to print, so you'd have all these high violin like parts with a sub tuba note at the bottom.
Especially if you're printing that for somebody to play, like, it's a lot of my range.
Yeah, it's like 13 octaves under my range, unfortunately.
Well, that's great. I remember the demo over at the NAMM show. What's the name of the plugin that you can take your loops and
Loop mash.
Yeah, it'll mash them up.
Yeah, so we always found that we always just have people and customers always have problems kind of making loops fit into projects. You know, it could be a different tempo or a different groove. What loop mash can do is you can actually just drag and drop loops from your media bay, which is kind of allows you to organize off your media or the project window. It'll do like a quick analysis, and then you could actually just simply go right there and say, okay, I want a variation in this loop, but still retain the same groove and feel. And then as you drop other audio files in, they could match the same timing. And then you could just kind of slide one slider over, and that would use more elements of that different loop. So you could kind of combine different loops, but always kind of in a musical way. So that way you can say, I want to take like a country vocal and a R&B loop and a rock guitar part and kind of make it all gel as one single part. And then you could actually assign different scenes to pads that could be triggered by MIDI. So it just kind of triggers from like C1, C-sharp 1. So you have different scenes set. And it also will always follow the tempo. So if your tempo changes, all of your loops within that within the loop mash would speed up and slow down to match the tempo automatically.
Wow. That brings a whole new life to a lot of people's library. You know?
Well, that's one of the coolest things about it. You could have all these loops you're sick of, and all of a sudden it can play them in a way you never thought of. It can slice them up and play the slices in different orders. And it does it. The thing I like about it is if you hear something you like, it's not just – there's a lot of creative control to it, but it's not random. So if you play with the sliders and you get something that you like, it'll then reproduce it.
Well, that's good.
I worry about those tools that are just purely random because right. unless you happen to record the audio the one time you liked it, you're never going to hear it the same way again.
Yeah.
And this is a professional tool, even though it's really fun.
So I can bring out my distorted reality sample CDs and give them new life then.
Oh, please don't.
You can try. You can at least hear them cut up different.
Oh, that's great. And then Steinberg also, what else do you get with Cubase 5?
We gave a new convolution reverb, Reverence, which has been incredibly well received. So, you know, a lot of our customers wanted, kind of an onboard convolution reverb. And what's nice about it is it has surround support, right? You know, we have a number of surround presets right from the get-go. It's all VST3, so you're going to have all the tagging for presets. But it's incredibly CPU efficient. A lot of other kind of convolution reverbs, like if I switch between two different environments, I'd always hear like crackles and pops as it's switching, but this is seamless to switch between like two different environments, and it's very CPU friendly.
Let me ask you a question. What's the big difference between a VST 2.0 and the VST 3.0?
VST3 is going to add like the tagging information for MediaBase, so all the presets can automatically be tagged.
Okay.
Every one of the VST3 plugin presets automatically configures to whatever channel configuration as well. So if you're running mono, it could run as mono or all the way up to 10.2. So you don't have to go out and buy special surround versions. Also, VST3, you have kind of dynamic CPU allocation so that you could actually say, okay, you know, like if I have background vocals that come in on a course and it has a lot of plugins on the background vocals, that those plugins don't take any processing power until it's actually processing audio.
Huh.
So it's a preference that you can turn on or off to kind of have more CPU resources if needed.
And just as VST in general, because didn't Steinberg invent a VST,
yeah.
right?
Yes, mm-hmm. we created VST.
Do you guys still control the VST format? I mean, is there a...
With an iron fist.
It's
not really.
Yeah, Steinberg's always been incredibly open.
Right.
You know, anyone can download the VST SDK from our website. You know, we've always kind of been the good guys and that we always thought, you know, we don't charge any money for VST. We don't charge any money for ASIO. We just open that up because in the early days, going back, you know, well back to the Atari where we saw kind of multiple standards
right.
competing against each other. And what happened was none of them became a standard and it kind of was bad for the customers. So that's why we kind of opened up those standards so that anyone could use it and have access to it. So, I mean, you may stumble across like free VST plugins, which sound better or as good as any commercial plugin, you know, and it could be like, you know, a college DSP, you know, programming course. And, you know, their kind of final exam is to write a VST plugin. So,
what languages are VST plugins usually written in? Rob, do you know? Or
I do not know.
I think it's C++.
C++?
Would make sense.
Yeah, but I'm not a programmer, so. Or software developer.
But that's cool, though, if you can download the SDK and if anybody has a...
Which I did, and I had no clue how to use it. I was like, okay, next.
Yeah, you do still have to be a programmer.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, you know, pictures where you say,
no.
Reverb.
I thought it just say,
button.
Make a cool button here. No.
Yeah,
not quite. Yeah.
Is there any problem with running VST, you know, 2.0 plugins on Cubase 5
and then
playing well with the 3.0 plugins?
Yeah, everything we did is kind of backward compatible. Obviously, you know, because we had VST3, and part of the development kit that we did was actually having like software test, like internal testing within kind of the SDK itself. But obviously, there's, you know, like tens of thousands of VST2 plugins, so
right.
those are all still work, you know, just as they would.
That's cool, because I know I've got a couple of VST plugins that I know are probably orphaned, and so I just want to make sure that compatibility.
Yeah, I actually opened up a VST plugin from like 1997 and installed it on my system for compatibility with an old project, and it just worked you know, without any issues whatsoever. So great. One of the very first VST plugins. So
that's cool.
Let me ask you a question about it. One thing I've found missing with Nuendo, and being completely honest, a channel, an audio channel, let's say a music audio channel, I can't seem to route it to more than one output. Well, obviously, I can't in 3.0, but maybe the later versions you can. Can you route it to more than one output simultaneously?
If you go to Descends and just route it through Descends.
Okay. Yeah, there's not a, unfortunately, yet. There's not like a drop-down menu where you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, add them to a couple.
Not yet.
Okay, because it'd be really cool, because I use an analog console, and I sometimes want to do side-chaining. And
Well, could you set up a bus that you send them to that
you could send up multiple outputs? You could send up to a group and have that group go to multiple outputs.
That's how I do it right now. Exactly.
Yeah, have a group like that. It's not as easy as just setting multiple outputs, but it's the next
best thing. It's the next best thing. You have to have a group. Within that group, you have to have it floated or off and have all the sends, pre-fader send, and have them go to the respective outputs. So you can have one group that goes to, say, four stereo outputs, the maximum of four stereo outputs.
Yeah, and I've seen people like set up templates, so that's all kind of set up, so you don't have to do it all the time. So you just kind of set it up once, and then that'll be your starting off point.
Do you have to use, like, delay compensation on that?
No, automatically.
It's automatic. Everything in the Steinberg products are delay compensated.
Wow, even on the...
We figured that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, just a bit, right? You know, it used to freak me out. Yeah, I mean, it really did. I mean, honestly, being an old man coming from analog consoles where generally everything's in time.
Right.
You go to computers like, oh, let's just put in a plug in here. It's like, but the thing's like 9 milliseconds off.
Oh,
it's like, oh, that's going to really help for coupling.
Yeah.
This is great. I can't wait for this. You know, it's just impossible to use.
You know, I remember Martin was actually writing a song and he was using the Cosmonaut plugin. On Pro Tools, and that thing just eats up, you know, CPU, didn't have any delay compensation. And he calls me, he's frantic. He's going, I play it back and it's all out of time and everything. I don't know what's up. And I go, okay, well, let's talk. And so we start talking and, okay, what are your plugins? And he tells me he's using this Cosmonaut plugin. I'm not going, well, there's your problem right there. You know, so it was kind of funny to hear, you know, he was so used to working in the analog world.
Yeah.
For him, that was an introduction to, you know, delay compensation.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of crazy if you think about you're working on a machine or a software piece of product that actually affects the time of what you're playing back. I mean, it's like, hang on, that shouldn't be happening.
I know.
It's a machine that knows how much it's affecting it. So Steinberg did the smart thing and said, well, we know how much each one of these plugins is delaying the signal. Why don't we just compensate for it? They were the first ones to make it kind of seamless and easy.
Yep.
Yeah, because we figured, like, you know, we went by a distortion pedal that made the guitar late. You know, or you went by a drum machine if you hit the pad and it, you know, came out 20 milliseconds later. You know, that wouldn't be acceptable for a distortion pedal or an inexpensive drum machine, so why should it be acceptable for your audio program?
And obviously the delay compensation doesn't help you if you're playing through a plugin live. So if you're using a guitar amp plugin on a live guitar, when you play it back, it's going to be in time. Obviously it can't predict the future, so when you're playing live, it's still going to be late.
Yeah.
And
Not yet,
anyway. Well, and there are some amps that just sound incredible for playback that are just slow. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the
you told us the other day. It was great.
Yeah. Soft tube.
Soft tube.
Yeah, that stuff sounds amazing, but we found it's a little too slow to play through live. So we'll a lot of times have the guitar player play through some other plugin for recording, but then when it's time to do the real mix, we'll switch to soft tube because it's delay compensated. It sounds amazing.
Wow.
For PC users, I just found Cowhouse Audio. You should check this guy's stuff out. He's no compensation, no latency, and really, really great plugins.
Wow.
Amazing.
What kind of plugins?
Pro audio stuff, all EQs, compressors.
Oh, like console stuff.
That was the link that you sent out, right?
Smoking.
Yeah.
And I'd really rave. I like the Oxford EQ, and I haven't heard much else. The UAD leaves me cold. I'm like, I remember what the real stuff sounds like. Mm. But I'm going to be honest, this stuff is smoking.
Hmm. So let's just wrap up the software version of Steinberg. What's included with Cubase 5?
So some of the main new things are the pitch correction. So a lot of people have likened it to having Auto-Tune and Melodyne kind of built in.
Oh, that's cool.
You're going to have Groove Agent 1, which is kind of like a software MPC, the Loop Mash plugin, the VST Expression, the Reverence Convolution Reverb, and the Batch Export. So those are some of the main new features.
That's cool.
And we also dropped the price, or the selling price, by $100 because we heard it's a little economic issue.
And there are a lot of presets and instruments and what does it come with synth-wise and instrument-wise?
You're going to have Halion 1, which is kind of like a sample playback, but actually kind of uses like all the original ROM of the original Yamaha motif. Plus you're going to have several synthesizers as well built in, and the drum machine and loop mash. So, and one of the other cool things about the Groove Agent 1, it kind of looks like an MPC, and you could actually import MPC programs, and you could drag and drop audio from your project window or from Media Bay directly onto a pad and just trigger it via MIDI.
Can you drag like from the Finder or the Windows Explorer window, or does it have to be from the Media Bay?
From Media Bay or from the project window.
Okay.
Now let me ask you a question. Cubase 5, it's really powerful, can do a lot of different things. You've got a lot of instruments. It actually wouldn't be a bad choice if someone wants to jump from, like, let's say a GarageBand or some of the introductory little loop-based program songwriters, things like that. What would you suggest would be the best route for a beginner to ease yourself into Cubase? I mean, do you have tutorials? Do you have web information that you can?
Yeah, we have kind of a dedicated Steinberg users site called SteinbergUsers.com, which has about 40 or 50 different kind of tutorial videos that are absolutely free. So I did a bunch of them myself. I was at Hans Zimmer studio, and his staff was telling me, he's like, oh, I can't wait for your new ones. You know, so even like those guys watch it, from entry level people all the way up. And it's kind of not necessarily like a marketing oriented, but you know, I have a loop, I want to make it fit, or I want to use the control room to do a headphone mix. It's kind of more of a problem solution scenario.
All right. So SteinbergUsers.net will literally take you from zero all the way to, you know, as high as you want to get.
Yeah, it's SteinbergUsers.com.
SteinbergUsers.com.
Yeah, our main corporate website is Steinberg.net. I think Steinberg.com is owned by a legal firm in Chicago. Not that they've ever done anything with it. You know, they learned how to buy a domain name early.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break right now, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about the Steinberg hardware, because there's some really exciting stuff there. So just stay with us, and we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. We're here with Greg Ondo from Steinberg, and we just finished talking about the software. And now we're going to get to talking about the hardware. Tell us some of the stuff that you brought out at the NAMM show.
Yeah, so we have two different audio interfaces and a little controller. Obviously, when Steinberg and Yamaha became one company, people expected immediately like an audio interface that made sense, that really kind of had incredible levels of integration between hardware and software. Then it takes a little while for it to develop. We came out with the MR816X and MR816CSX. Both of them, they both had the same I/O configurations. They have 8 really high quality Class A discrete mic preamps. It's going to have 8 channels of ADAT, word clock in and out, analog inserts on 1 and 2, SPDIF connections, as well as 2 independent headphone monitoring mixes. Now, the MR816X has 1 DSP chip, which powers the Yamaha RevX Reverb. This could be used as a plug-in, or you could actually monitor with 0 latency. The MR816CSX has the RevX Reverb on 1 DSP chip and a 2nd DSP chip that has 8 channels of compression and EQ. And you could actually record the compression and EQ to the signal with no latency, and again, use them as plug-ins after the fact during the mixdown process.
It has a DSP actually in the interface.
Yeah. So it's really kind of like a hardware mixer without the faders.
Now, if you use that on the batch export, will it export that also, or is that just...
If you're using them as plugins, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it works really, really well, and they sound great, and there's no latency, and takes so much of the load off the CPU or the computer because the DSP is happening in the interface.
Wow, that is amazing.
Because what we saw a lot of people doing is trying to, you know, okay, I want to monitor with reverb, and then I want to, you know, have a little bit of EQ and have a little bit of compression, and then all of a sudden it really would affect people singing and a performance
because
they're trying to kind of self-delay compensate.
Right, absolutely.
But it's really interesting if you kind of like, you know, when I do my demos, I'll actually just sit there and turn on, I'll have like the same exact exact configuration of software effects and then just switch to the internal effects on a DSP. And you could immediately see people, their performance change dramatically. I did a demo at Sweetwater where we actually had a drummer and a percussionist who both sang, and we let them record with the onboard DSP effects. And we're actually using it as a standalone mixer. So all the reverb was going out to the front of the house, all the compression. And then I just switched to turn the direct monitoring off. And these guys are, you know, incredibly tight singing, you know, again, percussionist and drummer. And they got through like three measures before they completely fell apart monitoring with the latency of the software effects. So we just kind of wanted to get rid of that issue so right. that it wasn't affecting performance.
That's amazing. That is amazing. And so the difference is one has the DSP and one doesn't have the DSP.
One has a reverb DSP, the other one has a reverb and the eight channels of what they call the morphing channel strip, which is a combination EQ compressor. So
and what's the list price on what's the difference between the
$999 for the MR816X with the RevX reverb. And this is the same RevX reverb that we see in a large Yamaha digital front of house console. Oh, yeah, so it's not like a throwaway batteries included reverb. It's a really high quality reverb. And $1299 for the MR816CSX.
Wow. That's great.
And they also work kind of as standalone mixers. They work as standalone A to D converters. We have a lot of people just buying them as mic pre's. And just, you know, going into, like, you know, even a Digi 002 or other systems and
using
it like
that. Standalone reverb, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And can you use it as a control room controller? I mean, does it have multiple speaker outs and things mm-hmm. of that nature?
Yeah, you have a master volume. And you can actually kind of dial in the reverb. There's two knobs which have multifunction control. So you could actually adjust the compression and EQ. You could adjust the reverb, the headphone volumes, and the master volumes.
Now, can you also control this your software too.
Mm-hmm. So everything. And instead of like most audio interfaces, the experiences always have to kind of go out to like a third party applet right. to kind of do all the routing and set levels. Here, all the settings for the reverb, the compression can actually be just opened up on the input channel of the mixer.
Wow.
So I don't have to go to a third party program. I could just do everything completely integrated.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, the sound quality is also really, I think Rob's been working with them.
Yeah, I love them. They're great.
As well. Like I set up, it was Kevin Walker who plays bass for Justin Timberlake and Prince, and like he literally just plugged his bass and played one note, and he's like, wow. He's like, I have to have that. I mean, just one note, he could immediately tell the difference. Wow. He's like, my bass has never sounded like that.
Okay, what note was it?
It was an E.
Well, the trick is to get him to buy one for every note. 12 notes on a scale, you're going to need 12 of them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
Some other notes in between there, maybe.
You also introduced, you have a little controller here that.
Yeah,
that
there's a lot of people that have.
That I won't let go. It's a beautiful little thing that is.
Yeah, it's called a CC121. And we think it was like a Cubase controller. It works with Nuendo as well. And the 121 number is for a 1-to-1 relationship because it mimics the exact kind of, you know, Cubase or Nuendo channel shape. You're going to have 100 millimeter touch sensitive motorized fader, pan. And just like we have on our Cubase channel or Steinberg channel strips, mute, solo, read, write, I could pull up virtual instruments, monitor, record, enable. I'm going to have my four bands of parametric EQ. I could select my different types of EQ, my transport control. We have four user assignable functions. So if you want that to open up the control room or the mixer or the punch out or undo, you could do that. A dedicated control room volume, which integrates in. So you can just simply, you know, push it into mute, and also a foot switch jack. So like I have that when I'm tracking at home, I'll have the foot switch and I just take any foot switch. I have a little Yamaha one. It could be M Audio, whatever. And like when I'm tracking, I may have that to enable my talkback microphone, or I may have it to undo or to record if I'm playing my bass. But the coolest thing is a thing called an AI knob. Realize that kind of the downfall of a lot of controllers is having to kind of do all the mapping, and no one really wants to do mapping of every plugin. So what you could do with the AI knob is any of the VST3 plugins, you could just hover over the parameter and just move the knob, and it's automatically assigned and controlling it.
And you hover with the mouse.
Yeah. So you kind of, what's great about it is it's small, so it's about the size of an actual computer keyboard. So you could just have it to the left of the computer keyboard, and it kind of turns just your left hand. Your right hand's in your mouse, and it's a very natural workflow.
Nice. So if you let me get this right. If I'm working and have a VST plugin open and I just want to assign this parameter to that knob, all I have to do is hover over that.
Yeah, hover and control.
I don't
hover,
have to click
control.
It or anything. Just nope. Just kind of hover over it, and then then
we figured out what's faster.
That's awesome. That is really
it's
cool.
Like a mouse.
Because you can change it. you know, if you just need it for that 1 second, because let's say you're just going to ride like your EQ or ride the threshold of your compressor or something.
It could be a fader. It could be your pan. It could be your send level, anything that you're hovering over.
So this is – and this is just for this knob only.
Yeah. Great. And that's what – and you could also – there's a mode where you could lock it onto a parameter. So if you wanted to open up like your compression ratio and adjust another parameter with your mouse, you could do that or just switch it to a jog mode.
Wow.
And are these knobs available for anything else other than the EQs?
The center section is dedicated to the EQs. And one of the other things is it's built of steel.
Right.
So it's a metal build. You know, I tried some of the other fader units, like the single channel ones that look really cool.
Yeah.
And I moved the fader and the whole unit shifted. And then suddenly, like, instead of mixing it, you know, 6 o'clock to 12 o'clock, I'm doing 1 o'clock, 7 o'clock. Next time I touch it, it's 2 o'clock, 8 o'clock, and the whole unit is shifting. But this is very rugged and very pro.
Bobby, what's your opinion of it?
I mean, I love it. I've been playing with it all night just joking with you guys because it's actually – I was literally about a week or two ago, I was thinking, man, I must make myself a little controller because I've – and this has come out and done it basically. There's a bunch of knobs on it, a bunch of rotary knobs on it. There's, 12 on there? 12
knobs for the EQs, sections, yeah.
Gain, frequency, and Q, and there's a pan and a nice motorized long slider. So it looks like a really good little box. What's it go out for?
I think the map price is $429.
So
very reasonable.
Very reasonable. And just to reiterate, these knobs, and I'm pointing to these 12 black
the EQ
knobs,
section.
The EQ knobs, they are dedicated to the new Nuendo or Steinberg EQ. Only,
yeah.
So I couldn't use it for another plug-in.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, we wanted something that was, you know, we see a lot of things that are very, very generic you know, kind of like could work with a lot of different applications and don't really work well with any.
Right.
But we wanted this to kind of be, you know, really dedicated to the Steinberg user. So.
And if you're using the EQ in the new MR816 interfaces, those EQ knobs could be controlling that, right?
You could use the AI knob for that.
Okay, because you're controlling from the mixer within Cubase, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's one thing I wanted to ask you, and I've always seen it on the big controller, I think it's the Euphonics controller for Nuendo, is that with audio, you have the little blue dots on an audio part, basically, and you've got a little blue dot where you can actually increase or reduce the volume or slide in, or fade out. On the big controller, you can actually choose the part and actually turn a knob or control a physical control and change the volume or the fade in and fade out. I've not been able to do that with using it. I can't seem to find a way of doing that with a mouse. There's no other way of doing it other than clicking on it and moving it, is there? And I wish there was. If the answer is no, I'm sure there isn't.
There may be a way through some preferences and keyboard shortcuts I could look at.
Really? So, I'd love you to check that out because I've really looked. I have like a whole keyboard shortcut system and I really haven't found that out.
I can take a look.
I'd love to. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah. I often kind of like have to set up like weird conditions like that. Especially, you know, like I had to do one like, you know, like triggering like locator start positions like for a Donny Osmond Las Vegas show. So his drummer from an Oxygen keyboard could go, you know, could hit any key on the keyboard and actually have them written down on a song. And I want to go to this song, this song, this song. So they could change the set around. So everything's kind of controlled from a little Oxygen keyboard on the side of the drummer.
Right.
So a lot of stuff is kind of really configurable, especially with kind of using generic remote.
Right. Yeah, the generic remote's great. A lot of those things in generic remote, if anybody's played with it, is actually kind of funny because you can actually choose it to display the VU meter or something like that. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like, what do I use this for? But it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's also like the little, I think it's called the XS keys, which is almost like
XY keys?
I think it's XS keys, where it's just like a little keyboard of like 60 keys.
X keys. Yes, I have a 128 X keys and I've got a strip. I've got three of them, in fact, and I've got them configured to hell.
But getting back to Steinberg, one of the things about Steinberg that, for me, I think of Steinberg is not only Cubase, but a lot of the VST instruments, you know, and, I noticed, you know, you go to their website, you don't quite have as many as you used to have. Like, I noticed you drop like the virtual guitarist and the virtual bassist and like Hypersonic, and those are, I mean, I have all three of those, and those are really great. And what happened to those? Is it you guys focusing on something else? You have other product coming out? Or?
We were kind of partnering with a company called Wizzu, and that company was bought by DigiDesign and Avid.
Okay.
So that kind of terminated some of the contracts. So some of the, you know, so we have a whole new development team that's working on new virtual instruments and updating. So, you know, we have Groove Agent 3.
Right.
We just updated Halion to 3.5 for 64-bit support on Vista 64, which is huge for people working with large sample libraries. So you can access more and more memory. You're not, you know, inhibited by 2 gigabytes or 4 gigabytes
right.
in the 32-bit system. We've also, we have the Grand 3, which should be shipping next month. So it's going to be a brand new piano based on a new Halion engine, which will be 64-bit as well.
Right.
And I think that's actually going to come with 88 gigs of piano samples, even like a Yamaha CP70, an upright piano. So a nice variety, not just like another grand piano, but, you know, other stuff that could be used in pop music a lot of times. So really painstakingly sampled.
I want each note to be 88 gigs.
Can we arrange that? Next version.
Okay.
Well, what about the, some of the, like Hypersonic was a cool plugin, and like my favorite plugin is X-Frays. I love
they're
X-Frays.
Great. I use them all the time too.
That's I mean that you know are you guys thinking along those lines?
Yeah,
that
and
stuff?
And obviously kind of
because
as,
the grand piano that's you know that's cool, but there's a lot of grand pianos out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, and we've taken a lot of some of the synthesizer technology right. and kind of incorporated it into. You know, into the application with
right.
like, you know, doing even stuff like, you know, the Spectre synthesizer and Prologue, you know, really kind of beefy synths.
Okay.
So I think, you know, kind of, you know, the natural evolution is, you know, sometimes it's hard to sell another drum machine, but it kind of makes a lot of sense to include that in with
right.
our host application and kind of make it even more attractive. But I, you know, we have a whole new development team that's specifically working on new instruments. I think we'll see a lot of exciting things coming soon.
Well, great. Well, thanks for joining us and giving us the rundown there, Greg. It sounds like Steinberg's back, and we look forward to some new projects, and Bobby looks forward to his discounts for the controller.
It's damaged. It's got to be $50 off.
You know, we still have a little bit of time left, and I wanted to bring something up for
your dinner
for everybody, and we need to help one of our own out. Okay,
I'm ready.
Someone who's been listening and who's been a part of the podcast, not actually on the panel, but who's been close, and they're going through some hard times, and they actually asked me to talk about this. Financially, they're kind of at the end of the rope. And, just meaning, you know, with,
you're talking
the,
about us,
with,
aren't
with,
you?
Yeah,
with,
really.
With the economy. And they were wondering about their gear. Okay. They were wondering about, should they sell their gear? Would any of us ever sell our gear if we got desperate enough? And I think the problem is because they've already cycled through gear several times. This isn't the first time this has happened. And I was telling them, you know, do anything you can to not sell your gear, because if you're a musician, if you're into making, you know, if you're into making music or you want to try to make a living doing this stuff, you're going to sell your gear. You might get caught up for that second, but then if you get behind again, you're going to be without the gear and without any way of replacing that gear. And so basically what I wanted to ask you guys is, have you ever A, been at the end of your rope where you've had to sell gear? Or what would you do if you were at the end of your rope and you had all this gear, you know, sitting next to you?
I've completely been there, and I did sell the gear, and this has gone back. This would have been
last week.
No, I'm just kidding. That's a whole different story.
And I bought it.
And he bought it.
And then he buys it for me the week after.
No, it must have been in the mid '80s. I was completely just beyond the end of my rope, and I had all this stuff for a hobby. I hadn't met Stevie Wonder yet. I hadn't moved to LA. I was still living in Philly, and I had like my own little studio at my parents' house, basically. And but I was just completely tapped financially, and I sold. I didn't have a lot of gear, but I had a few pieces, and I sold. I managed to sell all the stuff that later became a classic. I sold my 808 drum machine. I sold my 909 drum machine. I sold my Juno 106.
I've got them.
And I will say, years later, I did find another Juno 106 and bought it. And I do like that synth for some reason. I just really like it. But I definitely regretted selling those things. I didn't realize I was selling future classics at the time.
Right.
But
just seemed old.
Well, they seemed old and they seemed uncool, but the thing is,
the Lindrum was rocking at that stage, you're like, man.
Yeah. But I mean, I desperately needed the cash. I had no alternative, but you know, like if you're a carpenter and you sell your tools, it stops you from being a carpenter. So the only reason, the only justification for selling the gear is if you truly have no other choice on earth, or if you're ready to say, you know what, I'm just not going to make music anymore.
That's true. Well, you know what, that's a great story though to hear that.
I still have those regrets. I wish I could have that 808 and 909 back. For what I sold them for, of course.
I mean, I would suggest that if you're not winding us up and it's a true story.
I'm not winding you up.
I'll touch wood. I've never, ever been in that situation. I've been very, very lucky in the business. But either way, I would say that for anybody that does music, they do it, it's whatever form, whatever area it is. They're doing it out of love and passion and connection to the art of creating music, writing it, producing, whatever style, whatever area that is. I would say at the last thing, would you sell your musical instruments or your guitar or an analog mixer or whatever it is that the thing. If you do have to dump your digital crap, go for it. But just keep the stuff that's going to hold your character, not only for your tool to make you money, but it's part of your identity.
And your soul, really.
And exactly. For me, I'm not in that boat, so it's very easy for me to sit here and say this. So obviously take this with a grain of salt. But I would say damn it to whatever's against you, and you hold on to that bit of gear and say, no, I'm going to do this. And just hold it as your tool to fight the things against you. I would not sell your stuff.
Because also selling the gear generally, and what I remember from back when I had to do it, was it solved the problem temporarily.
Right.
But it's usually the sign of a more systemic problem.
Right, absolutely.
And so you need to basically fix the problem in the long run. Right. Getting you by for a month or two doesn't solve the problem for the long run.
And I swear, take a gig if you can. Get a gig parking cars. I mean, I'm not, you know what I'm saying?
No, you're
parking cars and you say, well, I've got a 12 string at home or whatever. I mean, whatever, it's got my mic at home. That's going to get me out of this. But you got to have a bit of hope as well. And I'd say go for it.
Well,
don't give it up.
There's a lot of regret.
No, but you make a really good point though, is about the hope part, because I find like the gear, certain pieces of gear, it's basically, it is kind of hope.
That's what we're here for. I mean, that's what we will hang on for, a little bit of
right. And I also think there's a lot of people out there that have lost jobs, and there's people out there that are probably on the end of the rope. And you know, if you're going to have to sell your gear, you know, just I my heart really goes out to you, because I mean, I've been in this situation. I've been fortunate that I haven't been in this situation where I've been making money with my gear and I had to sell it, but I've definitely have sold gear before that I regret selling, like Rob was saying, you know, and it's, you just look back and you're like,
it's tough if you're a parent, you know. There's a whole another chapter, a level of this which I can't talk to because I'm not a parent here. Well, you are, right?
I sell my kids, and then you keep.
Well, yeah, it's hard to get money for kids these days because there's too many of them. And most of them, they return them in a couple of days. Like, look, sorry.
But you know what? You make such a good point, though. It's so temporary that the solution that you think you have, you know, you sell that gear for a couple $100, you know, you're not making any amount of money on the dollar that you sold it, especially if you're selling it under a
discount, right.
Because you have to really lowball it to move it. And then you're just going to feel like crap later once that's gone. Like, I would do anything but sell the gear.
I honestly don't remember how I sold those pieces or who I sold them to or anything about it. I just remember that I sold them and I really regretted it. You know, the details of it have all kind of faded in 25 years. It's something I regret. And I don't know that I had any other way to get by financially at that time. And I wasn't doing music as my career. I was in engineering, you know, like computer engineering school at the time. So I wasn't thinking I was ever going to make a living in the music business. But, you know, chances are there would have been another way to get by back then. And I wish I had chosen.
No, I think you should turn to Defiance and say, no, I'm not selling this. I'm sorry. This is Defiance me. I mean, I know, obviously, if you've got like 20 grand's worth of gear that's unnecessary, I'm not saying be silly about that and let your kids go starving because of it. But I'm saying if you've got like some choice bits and you're getting down to the bones of your ass, literally, and you say, you know something, I'm in this world to be a musician. I'm in this world to be a producer. And I'm on tough times right now, but I can't sell this because otherwise I'm not a producer. But right.
And if you've decided, you know what? I've been trying this for a long time and it's not working out and I'm done with music. I mean, I have friends who have discovered that maybe they weren't as talented as they thought they were or as unique as they thought they were.
You're talking about me again, aren't you?
But you know what? It's a mature, good thing sometimes to realize maybe you're not cut out for something.
Sometimes you have to, you know, you have to clean the attic. Sure. Sometimes you have
to. So at that point, the gear is just weighing you down, kind of reminding you of something that you turned out not to be that good at. So there's nothing wrong at that point with lightening the load and moving on to something else.
Greg, you ever been in that situation where you had to sell gear?
He works at Steinberg. He's in the situation.
Always sell gear. Yeah, I've actually been lucky enough to kind of hold on to my gear. But when I was in high school, I used to play in a band with one of my, you know, with some of the high school teachers. And I remember one of them like really jonesing for a guitar that he sold when he was like 17 and living in Germany, and then calling like hundreds of vintage guitar places looking for this Hofner guitar that, you know, wasn't even sold in America, and almost like crying like a little kid about it. So I've always kind of been careful with my purchases, and I've been able to keep all my gear. And it's great for especially like pulling up for an old project, like, you know, like, you know, maybe you don't think a Proteus sounds good, but it just fit really well in his project, and you have to change it after 7 years to be able to have that recall. I've, you know, and even though I don't use, like, I still have a lot of hardware synths, even though I don't really use them that much, and they do look cool in the studio. So.
And I will, by the way, point out, I haven't actually sold a piece of gear since 1983, so I did learn the lesson, or whatever year it was.
Well, all I know is, every piece of gear that I ever sold, I remember it. I know exactly. I sold an M1 and when they first came out, and I regretted selling that M1, but I had to.
I can give you two if you like.
I sold an S10. I sold a U110. I sold a 505 and I sold an XBX 90.
And you sold all the stuff I probably should have sold.
Yeah, I agree with all those sales. If you have any of those bits of gear, sell them. Yeah.
But you know,
you get software versions, a lot of them.
Well, I have all those bits of gear and no one wants them.
The funny thing is I sold most of that gear to the same guy. And recently, because of Facebook, I got back in touch with him. And he said, hey, I still have the gear. And he started rattling off all the SPX 90, the U110.
He doesn't have your home address, does he?
No, but I'm so tempted to see if I can make an offer to buy it back just because it's just part of my history.
He's talking about something that's kind of...
they sound like crap, but the U110 was okay if you hit demo mode because it was kind of had a cool demo mode.
The SPX 90, anyway.
The Bumblebee. The Flight of the Bumblebee on the U110. I remember that. It has a demo. You know that?
Wow.
But
I was not going to ever figure out how to get the multi-temporal operation to work.
Yeah,
buy two of them.
Go ahead.
I'm talking the same thing. I called a rental company the other day, and I won't say the name just because whatever, but I used to use them a ton when I was a mixer. And I called them up, and I was sitting on their website just looking at their stuff for sale. And one of the machines for sale was a 3348. For anybody who doesn't know what that is, it's a 48-track Sony 48-track digital tape machine on 1-inch.
Mm-hmm. No, half inch.
And
very expensive originally.
Right.
Like 400, they had one, 400 plus thousand.
Right. They had one for sale for $5,000.
Oh!
Wow.
And I felt like nearly buying it just to bring it up. No.
Yeah. I saw one for $2,000 in New York.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
They were great machines.
I bet there's masters out there that you
Well, here's my thing. I'm thinking to myself, you know something, maybe I should call like four of my buddies and say, give us $1,000. I'll put $1,000 in, we'll all buy this thing, and we'll do like transfers. I'm sure we'll make $5,000 over the next 20 years. You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that needs to be transferred. The problem is there was the SR or the HR version.
Right.
That came later, the high-res, the 24-bit version.
Right.
So a lot of people have tapes that will only play on the HR version. And those machines, they're still nothing compared price-wise to what they were when they were new, but they're more than, you know, $2,000.
I had a Mitsubishi X850. Remember the old Mitsubishi?
Right.
It was 15-bit, 32-track. 32-track, 15-bit. And I think, I can't remember, it was a lot of money, and I bought it from Buddy Brunel from out of Conway about 3,000 years ago. And I think the thing was $118,000. And I think I dumped it for $7,500 about 20 years ago. Well, I mean, I was like, just like, talk about off a cliff. It's like,
wow.
I bought it and it went straight down.
Wow.
Yeah. I was talking to David Kahn. He has a room at Avatar, and he was telling me, you know, that he was the one who told me about the $2,000 3348, and someone else walked in and he's like, oh, I just paid someone $500 to take mine away.
Scary.
Wow, that is scary.
It's beyond scary.
Well, anyhow.
Are we all depressed?
We are, but
you know
the C-121.
Right, CC-121.
CC-121 could be yours for $450.
Yeah, same price as a Sony 48 pack.
Well, let's just wrap up the gear thing. I think the consensus is if you can hold on to it, do everything you can to hold on to it, because sometimes your gear is more than just a tool. Sometimes it's part of your identity. And
unless you've decided that music actually isn't your identity,
that's
and you're
going to
move on to something else, which is a completely valid decision that probably more people should make. Just being realistic, a lot of people fool themselves.
I 100% agree with that, but I think in the times we are in, the world's economic downturn and just general kind of downness of the world financially and whatever, it sometimes really weighs hard on musicians and artists, and because they get
you got to admit they get
kicked up the ass
totally.
In all economies, whether
totally.
It's going well or bad. But when it's really bad, and I think that if you're a musician, I don't know who you're talking about, so I don't really know. But if you're a musician or somebody that has a piece of defining identity, defining piece of gear, that's like, this is going to be your salvation, get you out of this hole you're in right now. Don't sell it. Stay with it, and actually just get a crappy job and keep that bit of gear in your closet and say, hey, you know something, I'm a guitar player or I'm a mixer or whatever you are.
I'll tell you what, this guy's definitely he's getting depressed, because he's really talented at what he does. He's really good, but lately some of his clients, or if you can even call them clients, I mean, he's like working for like $100 a day, and they're just being totally like the whole old adage is the
sounds like he's working for my clients.
Yeah, well, the less money they have, the more demanding they are,
and he's I think he's just was just run into a bad patch, but I feel really bad for him, you know, especially like I said, you know, he's $100 a day and he's doing it because he has to, you know, make his payments, and that's the only thing that he's finding right now, which is, that's obscene though. $100 a day working with these bands and
he's way more talented than that.
Oh yeah.
But
way more.
Talent is such a small part of the equation of success in the music business.
Well,
we all know that.
And I was telling him, quite frankly, you know, sometimes you got to say no to some of these lowball gigs. You know?
Absolutely.
I mean,
because they eat up all your time when you could be going after what your real passion
is.
That's
the whole thing. And you spend your time on these $100 a day gigs, and you're with clients that you don't like. For one thing, you're going to lose the love of just the whole craft. And for the other thing, it's going to take a lot of your time, and you never break that cycle. That client will never come back to you and say, you know what?
I'm gonna give you two grand.
I'm gonna give you. It just never happens. I the price I set for a client the first time I work with them is the price I know I'll always get from that client.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no problem, you know, saying no to clients when they can't meet that price, because for one thing, you know what, it keeps you, you know, on a higher standard to those people.
You don't want to devalue yourself.
Exactly.
Ever.
You don't devalue yourself.
I'd much rather be thought of as the guy who they'd love to come to once
exactly.
they can afford them.
Exactly.
As opposed to the guy who was willing to do the cheap demo, because you'll just always ever be the guy who does the cheap demo.
Yeah. So
learn that the hard way.
All right. Well, if you're out there and you're struggling with that decision right now, just, you know, listen to some of the experiences, and hopefully if you're going to get out of the business, then take Rob's route. And
I say, be defiant and say and I'm going to keep my gear.
There's other ways to get by besides selling the gear.
Right,
usually there's something else you can do.
Yeah, exactly. All right, gang. Well, Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, Greg.
Pleasure to be here.
And you better call some friends to help you get out of here with that CC-121.
What CC-121?
Never saw it.
Rob, you working on anything you can talk about? And you know what? You can talk now because there's nobody else here besides Bobby. So you got plenty of time.
And any more people here that's going to hear the podcast is saying.
The problem with talking about secret projects is not usually the guys around the table. Most of the clients mind the vast listening audience.
Oh, you noticed that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, we've been recording a ton of live music at my place that I'm looking forward to being able to announce to the world. And actually, maybe even by the next podcast, some of the stuff is going to be up for sale, and a lot of it's going to be for sale on websites that I'm building myself. We'll be up on all the normal, you know, iTunes and all that kind of stuff, but we're going to have some new kind of new sort of cutting edge ways of selling stuff that I've been developing.
And you should disclose your new culinary expertise.
My culinary expertise?
Well, at least your dining
expertise.
Well,
this young man, Bobby, has actually been teaching me to eat sushi.
No way!
Which is a major
challenge. He's chowing down on raw dead fish now.
Did you, wait, tuna?
I was always the chicken teriyaki guy.
What'd you get? Tuna?
California roll? I've done all kinds of stuff. I've done salmon skin roll. I've done albacore, yellowtail, bluefin tuna.
Tuna, yeah, exactly.
We got a new place.
We have... Squid eyeballs.
You better come down, bro.
No. I will. Does that mean that
we didn't do squid eyeballs.
Friday fish is now Friday raw fish?
It has become Friday raw fish.
Yeah.
It's pretty
fishy
strange.
Fridays. It's big time fishy Fridays.
Fishy Fridays.
like a social happening.
It's a nice hang.
That's
and,
great.
Where
do you guys go?
With Sushi Spot, it's called.
Oh, okay.
And I just got sick of all
the waitresses saying chicken teriyaki again. No. So, yeah, I've gotten a little more adventurous.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, spicy tuna, too.
Ah! Spicy tuna.
Yeah, but he likes on the rice.
They do it on a fried rice cake. It's the last thing, you know, it's not healthy, but it's delicious.
Going to have to come up and join that.
You got to. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Bobby, you working on anything?
Yeah, what am I doing? Nothing much. No, I am. I'm actually doing, I'm working on this Australian project, which is basically, I've told you about, it's been on and off for a couple of months. Right. I'm basically coming to the end of it now, negotiating with one of the managers of an artist. No. no, I'm just...
I resemble that remark.
I'm just finishing off a couple of the tracks, and it's all going pretty good. And that's it. And I'm actually getting ready to go on vacation.
Wow.
I'm going to see my sis in Brighton, England.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. He's going to come back, and we're not going to understand a word he says.
Do I now?
Exactly. Do they even listen? And then I'm going to go to Greece.
Wow.
I've got a buddy who's a captain, he's a skipper, and we're renting a 56-foot yacht between six of us, and we're not even having a hotel. We're getting on the boat, and we're floating around the Greek Isles. And we're just pulling into certain places that have Wi-Fi, and that's it. Wi-Fi and feta.
So you're taking a little MacBook.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, talking of which, any good suggestions for... I'm thinking a little iPhone, some communication kind of device, because I'm not going to be able to get good...
Skype.
Yeah, but I'm not going to be able to get good Wi-Fi out in the ocean.
Hopefully, you're not going to be thinking about getting good Wi-Fi out.
Yeah, you know what?
No, but you're thinking of getting something else. But I'm telling you, I may need to check in the old server, make sure you know everything's getting uploaded.
You know what? You know what you can do in Europe, and I don't know if you can do this in Greece, but you can get like a phone that.
No, I have a Euro phone, but is there anything else? I mean, I've got a Euro cell phone.
Yeah, there's a lot of phones with tether, so
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like with my phone, I can be anywhere and like run
right.
And over Bluetooth.
Yes.
It's just a Windows mobile phone. And over Bluetooth, I could be on the internet anywhere. Just
yeah, that
my
works
laptop
really well.
Around.
I use that too.
And it's not like hellishly expensive?
It's just part of the data plan.
No, but you can actually buy a phone out there and, you know, pay for minutes and pay for data minutes out there. So you don't actually have to use your phone, your Europhone that you have.
Okay.
Buy one when you get out
there. That's what I must have.
There's a couple of really good websites that show you all those type of
really? Thank you.
Different strategies on how to do that. And a lot of times it's, you know, you buy a pay-as-you-go phone wherever country you're
so
is.
Maybe the next party I could do remote from it cost me about like 90 grand.
That's right.
Sorry, just put some more money in.
Plus, well, I'll hate you. Yes, phoning in from the yacht.
Yeah, I'll be sitting there like with a tan and an ouzo going.
Bobby's going to be the lead story on Gizmodo. Man spends $90,000 on podcasts.
On podcasts.
With three people listening. Yeah.
Must sell gear as a result.
What should he sell?
I'll take your 808 and 909. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, good. You working on anything? Anything coming up? Any trade shows you're going to be at?
Yeah, I'll be at Summer NAMM.
Summer NAMM.
I'll be doing just a lot of traveling. Let's see. I'll be in California this week. Next week. Where will I be?
Yeah. I don't know anybody who travels as much as you do. Yeah, I seriously don't.
It's all kind of a blur.
Where do you live? What city?
Hampton Inn.
Yeah, I live in Hampton Inn. Yeah. I live outside Washington, D.C.
You do, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the 8 minutes a year.
I've only ever seen you here somewhere.
A lot of people think I live in Florida or Chicago.
Yeah,
or,
I've seen him in six different cities, but never at his house.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Kind of homeless that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you're not married, are you?
No.
No, just as well.
So I have to brag a little bit.
Go on.
My daughter, this past weekend, she actually got nominated for a sound award.
Are you joking?
No. And she didn't win, but she got nominated. And was
and for, what is the sound award?
It was it's for the Cappies, which is like a high school Tony Awards. And she's
amazing.
She's a really great actress, and she wasn't in this particular production because she was actually a musician and playing in the marching band. So she did the tech stuff, and on her own, she handled all the sound and she did the sound design and everything, and she ended up getting nominated for it.
Wow. Like, good for her. How old is she?
It's in the genes. She is 15.
Good for, that's good for you. Yeah.
What's in the genes? Have you been nominated?
No.
No. Okay.
So you know what? I got nominated once.
So you got the wrong genes on.
I got nominated once. I didn't win either, so. No, but I thought that, you know,
that's super amazing.
That's great. Really that's great. Excellent.
Number one, because, you know, being a girl and being involved with tech stuff, and so now she's like, you know, wants to learn all this stuff, and who knows, maybe next time you're going to have a different host.
Wow. But, that's good for her, though.
But yeah, no, it's, you know what, and she's really smart, because she wants to pursue acting, and she wants to pursue production. But I think she's kind of figured out, you know, that it doesn't hurt to get involved on the technical side of things because, you know, if something doesn't work out, you know, on stage, she can always fall back onto something it's on the technical end.
The more to know, the more you know, the better.
And I'll tell you, knowing acting, I think is the most important. I actually studied acting for a long time when I was a kid.
Did you?
I did, 5 years. Speech and drama. We used to call it screech and trauma. And elocution and theater. But it's excellent because you actually become, if you get into music and production, you become an actor all the time. Like, oh, you'd like to change that idea? No problem at all. Oh, so everything's perfect except the tempo, the key, right. The direction. Very good. I think it's a great idea. Carry on. So you have to practice it. And I think it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I just think anybody, if you want to be in a rock band or whatever, it doesn't hurt to fall back on some of the technical skills because, you know, originally I wanted to be a drummer in a famous rock band, and boy, did that not work out.
Why? It's not over yet.
Yeah. but being backline, it, you know, literally giving me the career that I have today.
Mm-hmm. Now that you can sell your gear.
Yeah, I can sell my gear. But no, it's, I just
still got a drum kit now.
I do.
You do?
I do. I still have a drum kit.
The trick is always to learn as much. I mean, any industry you're going to go in, whether it's music or anything else, you should learn every possible aspect of it because you don't know. I mean, you may think you want to be in front of the camera and you may get totally jazzed about being behind the camera. You never know until you try.
Especially with music, I will say that I was so glad that because I played in a band when I was younger. And we you know, did a little bit of success in Orange County. But there's nothing worse than seeing a band where it has a little bit of like national success. And then it gets stripped away, and next thing you know is you hear, hey, you know, the lead singer for such and such band is now driving a truck for, you know, UPS or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just really can mess you up, you know, and sometimes the safest route is, you know, not the safest route, but a really good route is, you know, going backline, you know?
Yeah, and I think nowadays, especially with music, you know, producers are just as equally, you know, well viewed upon as the artist in a lot of ways, so.
Yeah.
All right.
Especially with Melodyne, they certainly are.
Well, everybody thought after MTV you could no longer be ugly and in the music business, and it's nice to know there's...
And we've all proved us four.
There's still a way.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to wrap this up, but once again, thank you, Greg, and thank you, guys. And if you have any questions or comments, you can email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You can also visit our MySpace page. That's myspace.com/audio nowcast. Mm-hmm. And you can also reach us on our Facebook page, which I have no idea what the URL is. Just look for the Audio Nowcast page and you can find us there. So for myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.